Armageddon, Faith, and Doubts.
The roots for this discourse date back several years. In our last couple of years in Chicago, our regular Tuesday night meeting chose to study Volume 4. When I was first going through the volumes early in my consecration, I left Volume 4 the very last. My reasoning for doing this made total sense at the time. I thought, now past, not present tense, that study of this volume was only marginally profitable, as a large portion of Brother Russell's positions are justified by quoting from his contemporaries, putting them, at that time, upwards of 75 years in the past. With the kingdom establishment still in the future, how relevant to today's situation could they be? Well, it turns out there's a lot of insight to be gained by the study of this work, and then many of you might think, even though those same quotes are now more than 120 years old. What I didn't realize back then, and what we constantly discovered in studying this volume, was that the mega trends that were established at that time, Brother Russell identified, picked up on, and documented in that book. And they're still present today in today's order. They would live past him in his day, but it turns out we can still readily see them. Throughout Volume 4, the pastor is pointing to and consistently as an overriding cause of the Lord's rejections of the present-day systems and bringing down of the nations of the world would be a struggle between labor and capital, as he penned it. That basic struggle is still active today, but you won't find it written as such in the media. They're not called that anymore. The sides aren't so stark as just one side battling another. There's multiple fronts on this battlefield. Oh, labor unions still fight for increased shares of prosperity from management, whether in the private sector or in government. But now embodied in this battle are now multiple facets. Sometimes it's the 1% versus the 99, the haves versus the have-nots, Occupy Wall Street versus Wall Street. Today's more frequently discussed issue is that of income inequality. In the past few weeks, we have heard presidential candidates proudly assert there's not too much wealth. It's just in the wrong hands. And another just as boldly says that he views his future job as president as to make the rich poorer and the poor richer. Others just call this plain redistribution of wealth. But it's a battle for money and resources. The end goal is to ultimately get the power and control that inevitably comes along with it. Coming battles appear to be on many fronts and different fronts on different continents or in different regions of the world. On a global stage, there hasn't been a worldwide war for 70 years, although there are smaller wars being constantly fought. And there are volatile issues smoldering every day that could spark or contribute to making little skirmishes into full-blown wars. There are those at odds with each other, those who support Israel and those who don't. There's freedom versus totalitarianism. There's self-governing democracy versus dictatorship, or maybe even socialism, which is a hot topic today. Or closely related communism. Pure democracy versus a representative electorate or a central authority and control where you don't require any consent of the governed just to get things done. Population control to overcome that which the crowd calls current overpopulation, which even as at today's levels is viewed as incompatible with a totally green agenda. Do you support the left's most extreme positions, such as gay marriage, abortion, LGBT, and what other initials follow? Acceptance coupled with non-reaction for them is not enough. You must believe and support it. All agree that the climate changes and always has. But are we ushering in a greenhouse warming period? Or will the reduced output of the sun now happening in its cycle lead to a cooling period, or perhaps even another little ice age, as happened before the Renaissance, killing one-third of the population prematurely? Most are dogmatic on one side or the other, but only God can ultimately turn up or down the thermostat on the sun. To accomplish this agenda, it is claimed we need a single, worldwide authority that controls or compel compliance and tax sovereign nations to save the planet, of course. Can't have something like national sovereignty or constitutions get in the way. Could we lose the freedom that we so enjoy to pursue that which is most important in our minds, that being serving the Lord and doing his will? Or could we soon be told how to live our lives for the good of all, enforced by an Orwellian big brother? Before we go on, did you feel a little twinge upon the enumeration of maybe one or two of those issues I mentioned? Do you kind of think that in a couple of those, one side is more right than the other, more of what the Lord would approve of and support, and thus maybe that's kind of the side that I should be associated with? Remember what Brother Homer told us yesterday. Our place is not to align with either side. Brother Peter reminded us that they are all broken. They both have some correctness, but also much wrongness. They are being put in place and given leverage by the Lord for the ultimate benefit of the tearing down of all vestiges of current society to be ultimately replaced by the kingdom. Even when it comes to something as seemingly harmless as a Facebook posting favoring one issue or another, we feel it would be better to refrain and to stand neutral, even if there are only brethren on our list of friends. None of these issues will be resolved by man before the institution of the kingdom. They will all be dealt with appropriately within and after it. If you distribute anything, make it something that furthers the gospel and demonstrates the plan or inspires your brethren. When these issues are looked at as a whole, we don't have just two sides battling it out. Most reasonable people, and certainly the brethren at large, are a little left of center on some things and a little right of center on others. And none are at the extremes that we observe in the media today. But that battle going on between commercial, political, government, and societal forces is more like a circular firing squad, as many would couch it, everybody attacking everybody for not being of their prime issue. The media even describes the field of Democratic presidential candidates as such, and yet all are trying to defeat one common enemy. The inevitable going forward scenario is the degeneration of a structure of our society we have seen today into ultimately our anarchy. Layer on top of these conflicts the condition of the overconsumption driven financial systems. We can liken the stability of today's world banking and financial systems to a giant pencil balanced vertically on its point. Now that actually can be done, but it's extremely unstable. The slightest force from any direction will cause it to almost instantly topple. Now envisioned around this giant pencil are those who with much to lose. Every government, financier, and wealthy multimillionaire is desperately doing his part in holding up that giant pencil, supporting any side that's dipping down, keeping it balanced, because when it falls, they all know that there are no winners. Everybody loses. Rich or poor, powerful or weak, government or private citizen, everybody will be negatively affected. It's all part of the gathering for the final battle at Armageddon. We liken this as the battle for the ability to control the masses by molding, even forging them into a common perspective. To make this happen with those with politically incorrect perspectives, they are ridiculed, incessantly verbally attacked, and even in some cases physically attacked, in order to get them to see the issues the right way, their way, the way of extreme leftism. Peer pressure at places of employment, places of business, out on the street, places of higher learning, embodying the higher critics the pastor so often warned us about. With this group, anti-Semitism and anti-Christian perspectives are a virtue. Consequences to the faith, the household of faith we see. It's been our observation that the influences of these battles are impacting us and those in our household of faith in a negative way. It's fracturing, chipping away at us, causing some to walk away and become less interested or more entangled in worldly organizations. Perhaps this is all part of the Lord's doing in evaluating who is truly his and who are heading toward a lesser reward. Nonetheless, we labor in the same vineyard together, meeting in local ecclesias to join together in convention for ultimate edification and benefit and to spur on the completion of the body of Christ. We so appreciate the earlier symposium on faith, hope, and love. It embodied the many aspects of faith and hope critical to our discussion. So kind of just keep that as a prelude to this. We don't have time to delve into those issues, but we so appreciated the thoughts of the brethren that participated in it. When you come right down to it, faith is required for belief in any system, be it religion, science, current social systems, even political. Now, why would we say that? Those who only see the history of the world in an evolutionary scientific context claim God and religion are not necessary. But the world and its knowledge is so complex, so diverse, so dependent on many different fields that it's literally possible to prove any discipline. Emphasis on completely prove any discipline. Science lends itself well to a discussion on this context. To prove anything scientifically, you will typically have to rely on what has previously been investigated, researched, and accept it as true for at least part of the foundation of your proof. Your argument and reasoning then builds on that foundation. But is that really proving it? Or do you have to have faith that your references are sound and true? Do you research and verify all the references in the works that they refer to? Today, the motivation to publish and to be recognized as providing foundation for others to build on is strong and financially lucrative. To address legitimacy, published works are usually peer-reviewed, but in reality, they are more often PAL-reviewed. I'll give you my book to peer review, expecting a glowing endorsement, and I'll do the same for your next work. Who would risk the effort of several years of writing and research to just get a poor or lukewarm endorsement and then the resulting demand for the book drops to null? We learn via information, intuition, experience, and observation. Information requires faith that the source is true and clearly states the facts. And no one can know everything there is to know. Search the internet sometime for the last man to know everything that is known at a given point in history. You'll find a reference to Isaac Newton, maybe to Galileo, or maybe as far back as the Greeks, Aristotle, or a lesser known individual with time and access to the library at Alexandria. They required extraordinary knowledge just to comprehend all the material that was available. Today, we almost have the latter. We have the internet. And of course, if it's on the internet, it has to be true. Even if you could sort out the true from the not so true, who has the mental capacity to understand all of today's knowledge? Nobody does. The conclusion then is that to prove almost anything beyond trivial requires the faith in your sources and faith in imperfect individuals. It's somewhat easier for us. For the most part, our source of absolute truth is limited in scope to the scriptures. And here's a quick little example of the difficulty in proving anything without faith. We can't even prove the sun will come up tomorrow. I believe this example was mentioned already. I'll give you a little more detail. You may go about trying it this way. There's been 6,146 years since Adam. That's about 2.25 million sunrises without a single reported failure. And even though there was no human to verify that, you might want to add in another 42,000 years since the dawn of creation. And maybe even millions and billions more of that time, if you believe, as I do, that the first 6 days of creation were each longer than 7,000 years. Even considering just that 48,000 years, you'd bring your total of days to more than 17 million consecutive days without the sun failing to come up. That would lead us to believe that the statistical probability of the sun rising tomorrow without a catastrophic event such as the sun going supernova overnight, that's probably pretty high. Will the sun rise in the east tomorrow? Both the numbers and my faith say yes. But it's not the numbers that prove it. We have assurance to the fact in a book we ascribe to the one who created it all in the first place. God assured us that the earth abideth forever, and you can't have a habitable planet without a sun warming it. Almost everything boils down to probabilities and faith. Many times faith leads us to accept as true that which may seem less probable, matter of fact, even improbable. By the numbers. It's usually called a miracle. The question involving the sun rising tomorrow is not an issue that will challenge our faith, but as we witness the sure signs of this age winding down and the ushering in of the next, we do see other issues that challenge our faith. Brother Homer stated yesterday that we are closer to the completion of the church, the end of this world, order and the establishment of the kingdom than ever before. Can we prove that? Two key passages of scripture convince us of this. Daniel 12 and Matthew chapter 24. Daniel 12:1. Now at that time, Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people, will arise, and there will be a time of distress as never occurred since there was a nation until that time. And at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. Verse 4, but as for you, Daniel, conceal these words, seal up the book until the time of the end. Many will go back and forth, and knowledge will increase. Matthew 24:20. But pray that your flight not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. For then there will be great tribulation, such as not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall. And unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. For the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Clearly, the fearful times point to the application of the scriptures at this time. The increase of knowledge also at this time is unambiguously greater than any other. The fear in mankind's heart are rapidly approaching the level indicated in the passages as well. Has the rate of knowledge accumulation increased over the last 50 years? Well beyond the pastor's day. Well, a few days ago, we just had the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. And even within a few years, there were 5 more trips there, but no one has been back since. So maybe we reached the pinnacle of knowledge accumulation back then. Not really. Even though the technology those astronauts took to the moon and staked their lives on was the best of that day, it would better be described today as junk not worthy of child's toys by today's standards. Due to the weight budgets of that lunar excursion module they rode down from lunar orbit to the surface, it had walls made of such thin aluminum that you could put your foot right through it if you weren't careful. Even though it had multiple of what was referred to as mini computers on board, it was still insufficient for the task. On that first descent to the surface, the computers were so overloaded with data that Neil Armstrong had to land the LEM manually, and that was not in NASA's plans. He had less than 5 seconds of fuel left when he finally got the LEM down. After radioing back that the Eagle has landed, ground control replied, Roger that. You got a lot of guys finally breathing again down here. Not that many years ago, the chairman never had to open a day of convention, as Brother Bob did, by cautioning the brethren about disturbing the meeting by forgetting to silence your phone. In the days of the moon landing, the late 60s and early 70s, phones always had wires. And they sat on a desk or hung on a wall. They were only found in your home or at your work or on a pole in the street. And now those public phones are truly obsolete and practically non-existent. Though having these radio phones does make our life easier, today you can barely function in the world without a mobile phone. Laptop computers whose weight is best described in ounces, tablet computers, even less, and they're less than a quarter of an inch thick. When they went to the moon, most computers in existence needed tens of thousands of watts of electricity from the grid and another room just to hold all the air conditioning to keep them from burning up. And now these phones most of us carry have thousands of times more computing power than those room-sized computers, and even a million times as much as those overloaded computers on the first lunar mission. They're cool to the touch, run on a day or more on an integral rechargeable battery. So yes, things have changed technologically, and knowledge is still increasing, even now at breakneck speeds. But along with these great technological advancements, there has been significant societal changes too. And these have had significant, or what we might even say, dramatic effects on the development of the feet members trying to complete the church. We would call out some of the changes we have witnessed here in the last half of the harvest. Some have been so strong as to thin the numbers of those running for the prize, either enticing them with the lure of not merely worldly fame or fortune, but just acceptance, or at least acquiescence to what the world has to offer. Others have been led into belief systems that are in conflict with the truth's view and the view of the world's existence and future, the nature of God, the nature of man, and the source of truth. This is not really particularly new, as it's been going on throughout the harvest, as the Lord coordinates and finely tunes the experiences of his household of faith with the events on the world stage leading to the dawning of the next stage. What we perceive that is different is the relative proportion of those who have lost their way and why. In the first half of the harvest, consecration to a date and the resulting disappointment as that date passed unfulfilled was a major cause for those leaving the truth. Mainly 1914, but even 1954, 40 years after the ending of the Gentile times, resulted in prospective members walking away in disappointment. And there were some movements that embodied a little or even a significant amount of truth, drawing numbers from the truth movement. In today's world, we see influences and movements that affect the brethren even more. The Lord has chosen to turn the temperature up in different parts of the world, even to the points of many thinking this is truly the beginning of Armageddon, only to let them cool off and cause another hot spot to flare up. If you're a boomer, as I am, or older, you'll remember your apprehension and the anticipation of perhaps the kingdom coming shortly with some of these incidents that have occurred in the last 50 years. In the 60s, we had the Cuban Missile Crisis, assassinations of President John Kennedy, his brother and active presidential candidate Robert Kennedy, and civil rights giant Martin Luther King, subsequently fueling race riots in many cities. Arab nations launched two surprise attacks on Israel, but ultimately East Jerusalem and the West Bank become secured by Israel during these wars. In the 70s, the Arabs initiate an oil embargo on the West, and with the resulting energy crisis, long gas lines and rationing become commonplace. An unprecedented presidential resignation takes place. Inflation is very high as the decade closes. You know, I know we had an 11% mortgage at that time and thought it was a great deal. We move into the 80s with a seemingly cooling off with lower inflation and the beginning of a massive economic expansion. But near the decade's end, the Cold War heats up again as the West begins a large missile defense development program and the Soviet Union threatens retaliation rather than join the competition, which they can't afford. 90s, again, more ups and downs. The fall of the Berlin Wall and dissolution of the Soviet Union, called for by President Reagan and realized by his vice president in the following administration, takes place. Fear of an impending Armageddon subside somewhat, but only for a short while. There is a Gulf War with Iraq, resulting in the liberation of Kuwait. But it ends quickly. More prosperity. The internet expands. Computer accesses for the masses becomes a reality. The politically correct speech movement starts to get really serious and gain some devotees. We come to a new millennium and a new fear, Y2K. Computer crashes due to not being able to handle the year being stored as a two-digit number and they mostly use that format. And what will happen when they flip from 99 to 0 time can't go backwards. Dire predictions such as power plants going offline and crashing the grid raises fears again, but nothing really happens. The dot-com bubble, though, bursts. People thought the internet was going to just make gobs and gobs of money for everyone, and then it fell apart. The 9/11 attacks happened, resulting in other wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which will take a decade and a half to wind down, the longest in U.S. history. The iPhone and resulting smartphone market marks another milestone in the electronic and communication unrelenting revolution. Smaller, faster, cheaper. Political correctness is now the norm. But as this decade hits its second half, the subprime loan fiasco drags down an economy that has been straight up since the Reagan administration. Some markets crash and some banks go belly up. Unemployment soars. Interest rates start approaching zero, incredibly. Is a failure in the financial structure finally going to take down that current order? Is the pencil leading beyond the point of no return? Close, very close, it turns out, but not quite far enough. The economy flounders for another 6 years as unemployment falls, only as more and more give up looking for work or take meager jobs for which they are grossly overqualified. This brings us to the recent past. Who would have predicted a businessman who has never looked for or gotten a single vote in his life is elected U.S. president? The economy booms. The stock market constantly sets new all-time highs. It's up 290% just since the 2009 crash. The energy crisis of the 70s is ancient history as the U.S. becomes a world leader in exporting oil. Despite this, things are not one big happy situation. People just can't help but feel that we are just on another bigger bubble than before, which will shortly burst with even more devastation than the prior one. Hearts failing them for fear. Volume 4 particularly points out individuals such as Cornelius Vanderbilt, John D. Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, and J.P. Morgan being the leaders of capital on the one side of the upcoming battle. They were also known in a recent TV production as the men who built America in those early days of the harvest. If asked today who they were, you would likely get a blank stare from most of our young people. In the minds of the public of recent generations, names like Steve Jobs of Apple, Bill Gates of Microsoft, Jeff Bezos of Amazon, Larry Page and Sergey Brin of Google, and Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook are recognized more as the names of the technological giants driving that increase of knowledge revolution, and not to mention gazillionaires to boot. But there is some difference in these two groups. In the early harvest, those who made major impact on society were just focused on making their product the one in highest demand and just making them the most money. The second group, the more contemporary group, certainly want to make a lot of money. But additionally, they seem more devoted to promoting agenda with their fortunes and the resulting power that it gives them. They seek to impose their ideology of influencing and controlling the masses, thinking through their technological innovations. Now, we're not here to discuss or debate their ultimate intentions. Whether sinister or noble, we can only be certain that they are not in sympathy with the ushering in of the kingdom. But as a result of their wealth and power and resulting dominant influences, the goals of the extreme left are further pursued. There is not only a gathering of participants in the science and ideological areas, the parties capable of bringing about a real war are gathering as well. Russia has been working diligently for a decade on becoming the old Soviet Union again. China, now a nuclear club member, is too looking to expand its economic growth and strengthen its military to be on a par with the U.S. Weak members of the EU are demanding greater and greater subsidies from the more affluent members to maintain their entitlements, while the governments of the stronger cut their commitment to defense to the delight of Russia. Gaza continues its random missile and mortar campaign against Israel. Israel claims the Golan Heights as its own territory. Iran is trying this very week to provoke the U.S. into an attack just to gain world sympathy and relief from the sanctions it has imposed. And just this morning, they arrested 17 of their own citizens claiming they are CIA spies. All kinds of little hotspots exist, which could become major in the blink of an eye. The church, prospective FEET members, and the balance of the household of faith are also under assault at this time, too. Doing your own thing was once an admired tradition. Even if I didn't agree with you, I respected your ability to just do it. Now it's disdained if you're not in sync with many or all of the causes of the extreme left. Anti-Christian sentiment and physical attacks are increasing, while news of such attacks are partially or wholly suppressed. There is a violent group called Antifa that exerts incredible influences in the governing of some cities in the United States, Portland being one of them. Even association with our doctrines and Bible interpretation are no longer merely being scoffed at or ignored, but are instead being associated with hate speech. The mocking and or threatening of those who take a stand for Christ and righteousness are becoming increasingly commonplace. Being a fool for Christ is becoming easier. Any belief system not the norm and correct thinking is characterized as everything from fascist to racist to being phobic, fearful, or hateful of anything differing from you. Pressures of being different, seeing unrighteousness where nobleness is being claimed, are too much for some in the household of faith to deal with in their job, education, or other life experiences, where we have to touch and have contact with the world. Don't let such just disengage from the truth movement. Continue to be a light of truth, a beacon of faith, an example of the believer. The Lord may provide just the experience for them to see your light. We'd like to conclude with just a couple of short quotes that we found just incredible, showing the insight of the pastor into where the world is going to. Reprint 1485, written in 1893, over 125 years ago. Our day is peculiar in many respects. Not only is it a day of blessing, advantages and conveniences beyond any other. This was 1895. Not only is it a day of greater light and an understanding respecting the Lord's plan, but it is a day which the great enemy of truth is permitted to spread before the awakening, nominal and real church, more sophical delusions in the name of new light. In reprint 2898, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth? Luke 18:8. It is surely very scarce at present. As the higher critics proceed, as the evolutionary theories spread, faith in God and his word becomes more and more vague and lifeless. How thankful we should be to God for the meat in due season, the light of present truth, which hinders us from being shaken as of others. Hebrews 12:25-28. And may the Lord continue to bless you and guide you as we navigate the last days of the arrangement of the harvest, and the kingdom is further ushered in. We pray your flight will not be in winter, but be in summer. May the Lord add his blessing.